Blog Talk Radio.
You're the light, you're the night, you're the color of my blood. You're the cure, you're the pain, you're the only thing I want to touch.
Welcome to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Join us as we bring weekly cultural topics right here to our studio. You, as our studio audience, are welcome to chime in and call the studio or join us on chat. Because, you know, at Cultural Conversations, we believe that welcome to Cultural Conversations with me, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Join us as we bring weekly cultural topics right here to our studio. You, as our studio audience, are welcome to chime in and call the studio or join us on chat. Because, you know, at Cultural Conversations, we believe that cultural issues really do shape and impact our world. So, join us as we discuss the hottest topics and the cultural issues of our day. Stay tuned. Well, welcome to Cultural Conversations with your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. Tonight, we have a timely topic of the state of Muslim political and social affairs here in this country, not only in this country, but we want to take it abroad as well to see what's really going on. We hear about Muslim-Islamic relationships in the news all the time now. It seems like that's the hot topic. They're part of our community. But we want to know what's really going on in their community with the onset of the things that we're seeing in the news, the things that we're seeing abroad. What is the mindset there? Are Muslims together in this community? Do they have a separate community? Is it a separate assimilation? So some of those questions we'll ask during our hour here. We have a wonderful guest, and I'm thinking he's on the line right now. He's a longtime friend of mine, and it is Abdi Malik Askar. And I'm going to try to get him on the line right now because we got some important conversations to take place at Cultural Conversations tonight. And so hold on to your seat. I'll be coming right back at you, and then I'll introduce our guest for this evening.
What is love?
again, thank you for joining me on Cultural Conversations tonight. Our topic tonight is the state of Muslim political and social affairs, and we have a very special guest in our online studio tonight, and he is Mr. Abdelmalik Asghar. And he will join us in just 1 minute, but I want to give him fair opening. He's going to talk about Muslim affairs in the state of Minnesota, in the Somali community, and particularly, and in the country and abroad, because he's traveled and represented his country quite well abroad. He is a successful media personality in the Muslim community, particularly the Somali communities here in the United States, Canada, and Somalia. Abdelmalik Asghar was recently the endorsed Republican candidate running for the Minnesota House of Representatives in District 60B in Minneapolis. Asghar is the first Somali Minnesotan to be endorsed by Republicans to run for the state legislature. Join me now as I welcome to our studio Mr. Abdelmalik Asghar. He's a personal friend, and I'm happy to have him here tonight. Abdelmalik?
Yes, thank you so much. Thank you for inviting me for this wonderful show.
Yeah, I am excited that you are here to shed some light, to shed some understanding, as you always do. You really come through in shedding some understanding and bridging cultures. So just give our listening audience a bit of background about yourself, where you're from, what are some of your research interests and community interests.
Thank you so much for giving me this opportunity. I was born in Somalia, and I grew up, and I left when I was 17 and a half, across the border from Kenya, and then lived as a refugee at Kenya for 2 years, and then left from there to get opportunity to live this wonderful country called in America. And then we were the first 44 families, Somalis, who got a resettlement at San Diego, California. As you know, when we come to refugee, the INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service, they didn't through or bring it to Minnesota in a cold weather, but they did a little background check, and they said, where do these people come from? Mogadishu, ocean, very nice weather. And then they send it to us to San Diego, similar weather to Somalia, but we ended up in Minnesota in the colder weather. So
okay.
I arrived in Minnesota in 1993, January. Our goal that time, we were 28 youth exploring, looking for opportunity for work. And we did not start life in Minneapolis. We did start life in Marshall, Minnesota, in southern Minnesota. We work in a small factory called Heartland. It is a turkey factory. And our goal was to work overtime, work hard, and buy a car and go back to San Diego. That was our mission to come to Minnesota. But we didn't go back in 22 years that I lived in Minnesota. We ended up in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And then I go to college, at Normandale Community College. I graduated, and then I go to university, bachelor degree, computer science, work 3M in a Seagate, animation. In 7 years, working computers, I'm tired, and I said, I want to talk to the people. And then I changed my master to project management. And then while I'm doing all this, also I'm married, I'm raising children, for 5 children. And then I get my master's degree 2006. Then I started my doctorate leadership right away. So I'm doing now, finish all the coursework, my doctorate, and then probably next year I will start a dissertation if it's possible. And it's education. So I changed a little bit my computer to project management to work at Minnesota State College University. Then in education, established a charter school, successful is running for North Minneapolis, which we partner wonderful, wonderful guy, Eric Mahmoud. He was founder, him and his wife, to Harvest Network. And then we partner with him and establish the best academy East. And they have almost, we have 300 students. And then last year, I said, let's try the politics once we have a successful school, successful work. So I ran for office, as you mentioned it, and then I get endorsement for Republican Party. And then I get almost 3,000 votes, but I did not win. So now I work at the Minnesota House Representative as the second person for technology. So the Republican caucus at the House, and I'm doing fantastic. And then we have
I want to get a word in because I can see people are calling in on the line, and so I just want to stop you for just a second. But I want to get a word in just to kind of give some updates about who we have on the show tonight. We're talking about the state of Muslim affairs, political affairs, and social affairs. And we have, we're very privileged tonight, Cultural Conversations, very privileged to have Abdulmaleh Askar in our studio, our online studio. And just to give you a brief background, he's been kind of giving us, the listening audience, some information on him, his role to where he got to be at this present moment. He is a successful media personality in the Muslim community, particularly the Somali communities here in the United States, Canada, and in Somalia. Abdulmaleh Askar was recently the endorsed Republican candidate running for the Minnesota House of Representatives in District 60B in Minneapolis. That is no small feat. That is a tough area to crack, and it's also, I've worked political campaigns before. It is a very that's a successful marker that you are able to bridge and cross traditional representatives or government and political lines, and I think that you should be commended for that. So I just wanted to stop right there and commend you. Abdulmaleh, if you are listening to the show tonight, because we're about to get into some questions and you may want to be on this line, please do call in at 347-857-3121, and I will get you on to answer the questions. If you have a question that you want to answer or ask, and you'll have that answered, or a particular issue you want to have discussed, we'll see what time we have, and we're going to discuss those as well. Abdulmaleh.
Yes. Thank you so much.
Okay. Still with me. Could you tell just a little bit, I know your community interest, what has been your community interest for the last couple of years? I know you were in school, but what has been your community interest in the last couple of years?
I think the Somali community are growing fast. As you know that, we grow in the business side, we grow in education side, and the students are graduating the University of Minnesota. So now it is a time the community wanted to go to the second level. For those who, like me, stay in a long time, would like to participate in a politics, a couple of Somalis around last year. And then for those a little bit, they're graduating some doctorates, the work side, as you know, that now profession, if you go to the government center, is you can see a Somali person working there. We're doing a fantastic thing in Minnesota, the business-wise, work-wise, but still we have a little bit challenges about, and sometimes we use the word we, for sometimes if one Somali did wrong, then we're going to label all the Somali communities. So how we minimize the word we use, we, and base it on individual action if somebody did wrong. So that we still have that challenge as we come from traditional and non-secular countries. We always use, in this individual to our collectivism. So we always say the word we did this, we did that, Somali did that, Somali did that. And then also the media attention, they use that word, we. So so in terms, but the good side, the community, when you look at it, In the last 3 years, they used to say that Somali youth are a lot in jail. No, the last year the data was only 200 Somalis was on the jail, compared to 400,000 something Somalis live in Minnesota, only 200, as you can see that. So we're doing fantastic things, and we're growing. But at the same time, if one thing happened to back home Somalia, then we get also hurted in Minnesota, and then media will give attention for that.
I noticed that, and that was my whole premise to having a conversation, a cultural conversation, because, you know, collective people, even in the African-American community, we do use we, and when somebody does something in the community, even though we're individuals, we still feel a sense of shame sometimes, a sense of anger sometimes, and it may not be us personally, individually, but collective as a community, we still do feel it. And one thing I wanted to talk about, since you've mentioned it and you brought it up, about the youth, so much focus is now in the media on Muslim youth, Somali youth traveling back to fight or to engage in maybe behavior that is adverse to here in the U.S. If you want, could you speak to that? What are we seeing here?
Yeah, thank you so much. As you know that for us, in the last couple of years, we worry about our children become gangs. As you know that in Minneapolis, a couple of Somalis killed each other with gang-related. And then we worry about the children, about the gangs. And then a lot of Somali youth, is they go to the mosque and pray. And we said, oh, they become a good behavior. My son would be good. He go to the mosque. And then suddenly we found it out there were some youth go back to Somalia and did suicide. That time the community wake up and they said, what's going on? How they ended up coming back to Minnesota or grow up in Minnesota and going back to Somalia and suicide. And then the parents wake up. We talk to the media a lot, the Somali community, within the Somali community media. We give them the parents' hand is on. We talk to them, and we need to find it out. And then it drop it up. Once the community started up themselves, no one else cannot solve the problem within our community, only can solve the problem. So, and we started up the parents. Do you know your son what is learning in the mosque? Do you know your son who is calling? Who is his friend? And the parents at that time, they wake up because the parents was worried that time only two things, sex trafficking and the gangs. But now we got another one, which was the student, the youth go back on suicide. So the parents wake up, and then those three become drop for almost 2 years or 3 years. And then last year it started up in the ISS in Syria, one Somali guy go back and suicide. And they said, how is connected the Somali? They didn't go back to Somalia, now they go back in Syria. What's going on? And it's the time to wake up. And again, what we did success about, we need to go back what we did success about to educate the parents and say, let's go back. But this time was a little bit too different. One is the person go back to the Syria is not in a teenage, he's like almost 28, 24 years old. So that's not a youth. Okay,
right.
That's number one. The second is for the media or instead, this time they collaborate and work with the parents the way we did in a success in the past, and we stop gangs, we stop sex trafficking, we stop terrorism. Now, they, in my opinion, they changed the whole games and leveling the communities and using a different direction. They're not going back the success we have done to talk to the parents, to educate the parents about the situation, but now they're saying that we wanted to educate the youth. And then suddenly, I don't know how they're going to fix that problem, but I think with the way to fix it. In the past, we have historic success. The parents, we educate them, and the gangs was down, the sex trafficking was down, and then also suicide. We never hear in a couple of years Somali going back into suicide. So how are we going to go back that success and to stop them now for those who are trying to go back to Syria?
Yeah, you know, as you're speaking, I can remember, you know, the news media, which I don't have a issue with the news media. I just want them to tell the narrative correctly, you know, and if you tell the narrative from the eyes or the viewpoint of the community in which you're trying to tell the story of, I have no issue with that. One of the things that I can remember distinctly when they were recruiting, well, whoever, and I don't know the name of all the groups, all the, you know, groups that recruit these young men to do whatever they do once they get wherever they gotta get. I don't know all the names of them. And but one of the things that they said is that these young men, they don't feel a part of anything. They're in their community. They're in their host community, their home community, but they don't feel a part of anything. They don't feel a sense of accomplishment. They don't feel, I don't know if they don't have jobs or they're not in school, but something is not going well here. And so how do you think, you know, how do we give the outside community, give and the inside community, give positive support? What kind of positive support could we give to a young Somali youth, even an older Somali person that may be on the verge of doing something? What could we do as a community to say it's hard for everybody out here? It's not easy for anybody living in the U.S. What could we do?
I think that's a good question. As you know, that for those who go back to Somalia and did suicides, if you look at their backgrounds, they're all failing schools. They're all felonies. And then they become, as you mentioned, that they not become the part of the community. Once they drop their schools and fail in on that, and then the community put in a part, and then they become hopeless. But in America, we have a lack of information on that. There is a lot of opportunity information in America, that second chance to the people go back and get second chance. How many people now in America and have a good work, have a good things, but before make mistakes? Well, there's a lot of them. But in our community, we don't have a role model person to stand it up and say, you know what, I was bad, and I did this, and I did this. Now, here I am, and if I make it, you can make it. And I can show you how I did success after 5 years, 6 years, and failing schools and dropping this, but now I get success. We don't have that role model yet, but we have the other role model is those who success businesses, those who success schools, those who politicians, those who singers. So we don't have that role model, that a person who's successful has a second chance. So those is one way, things that's one way. The second thing is how the whole in community, instead they become fear, how they can integrate in American life for better way. Because I know the world, if you watch the news, is sometimes they say that we don't have an Islam. I would like to explain, I'm not a scholar in Islamic, but I'm Muslim. And one thing I would like to say is that Islam and Muslim is different. A lot of media, they use the word Islam. The Islam means the religion itself. But the Muslim is the person who use the religion. So instead they use the word in Islam, in all the media attention, so I would like to educate them to use a Muslim. And then when it comes to Muslims, the people who believe the religion, then they can say a good Muslim or a bad Muslim. If bad Muslim do some action, then that we're gonna call in a bad Muslim guy. In a city, we're gonna call in Islam, all in Islam are bad, or all Islam is this. So because they finger pointed to the religion, But thousands and thousands and millions are believing the Islam. And they are good people. So we're going to say in a good Muslim and a bad Muslim. And instead the people use those words, and we educate us a Muslim to the communities, then it will narrow the problem, and then we identify who is the bad Muslim and who is the good things. But if we use it in a big terminology, in Islam and Islam and Islam, then who is the Islam? So that is one thing we need to educate in American side about the Muslim and the Islam, the differences, and how we can narrow the bad Muslim actions in a city, and we how we're going to promote the good Muslim people. The Somali side, we need to go back and educate the parents about their children, about how those who fail, how we can get the resources and information to make a second chance, how they can go back to the societies, what they can do about it. Is there any organization, is a non-profit, is all that can help them? Is there any resources out there? If they fail in Minnesota, they might success in California. How they can change an environment if it's not in the good for them. So all those things, we don't have a non-profit organization within Somali communities for that. The only things that we have is the people who, if they want to do the bad things and go back to the society, they started first to pray and to go back. As you see, the church is also like that. When the alcohol in America, they go back to the church. And then they clean up in the church. And similar like that, they might go back to the mosque and clean up. But at the same time, when they go back to the mosque, we don't want the bad Muslims to take advantage for them.
Right. Right. I think that's very important, and I think you bring out an important point. I know you bring out an important point. You know, when you have that peer pressure, and that peer pressure happens for no community is excluded from having that peer pressure. And you could be a person that's trying to do the right thing, and you can have one person that's trying to convince you to do the wrong thing. You can have one bad day and slip into doing the wrong thing. And I think one of the things that you said also is that we need more organizations that foster Islamic understanding, bridging Islamic understanding, because there's so much that we don't know as an outside community. And there is an inside community. You have your own community. You have your own kind of sealed-off community. We have our own sealed-off community. But when we see another community that's suffering, we don't have the tools. We don't have the skills to assist. We're not even in a position to assist, because we have things going on in our own community. But, you know, and that was my question, like, what can we do to make everybody feel included? Like, if you fail, just like you said, if you fail, then have somebody else say, yeah, I fail, I didn't graduate from high school. But it's not the end all. It's not the end of the world. It's just a stepping stone that we have to get through. So I applaud you for noticing that. Will we have more nonprofits that's coming up in your community, Abdul Malik, that will address this?
I don't think so. They go that way. I don't see that. But they go the different ways about that. And they go to the Washington, D.C., and they and getting the money to make the community more fear about it, and FBI things. And the community feel torture. You know, some of them, they said, how we can worship in our Islam if it's happening, all these things. So instead to be the community to be fear, we like to change it that way and create an opportunity and give them a second chance for those who failing, as we mentioned in it earlier, and then how to educate the parents about, because nowadays people having students or youth, they have all smartphones and iPhones. The parent, how we can educate them, they know the children, who they talking about, who they texting for it. Instead, we're going that, but if we increase about the police and we increase about an FBI, if we increase all those things, and looking for in Washington, D.C. for $15 million to bring it into Washington, Somali community, I don't think so that way is going to work. And I think so that community will be feared and feared and feared. So we don't know what privacy we have, and that's going to be scary. And it's still to change in our success we did in the past. We reduced the crime, we reduced the sex trafficking, and we reduced for students and youth going back to Somalia. It did reduce to educate the parents with no $15 million.
Mhm. Yeah, that is a goal, and you have those goals, and you have seemed like you have the strategic plan to put this thing in place, to start the wheels turning. So we're gonna take a break right now, but I'm expecting more of that strategic plan from your head, Abdulmalik, because you have some of the answers that this community is so desperately wanting and needing. We'll be right back. Hold on. If you would like to call the show, please, you can call the show at 347-857-3121. This is Cultural Conversations with your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. I am having a cultural conversation tonight with Mr. Abdulmalik Asghar. He is a member of the Somali community here in Minnesota. He's also a very successful media personality in the Muslim community, particularly the Somali community in the United States, Canada, and Somalia. Mr. Asghar was recently the endorsed Republican candidate running for the Minnesota House of Representatives in District 60B in Minneapolis. Asghar is the first Somali Minnesotan to be endorsed by Republicans to run for the state legislature. That is no easy feat, listening audience. So he is joining us tonight to give us an update of the state of Muslim political and social affairs, especially as he sees it in his community. I think it's very important that people share their own narrative and they come up with their own strategic plan of action for their community, for the ills in their community, and also for those things that are celebrated in that community. And so we're talking about Muslim affairs. We're talking about what's going on here. We see them in the news now, the news media, and we have since 9/11, that's been the big buzz. But just lately, with the things that have been happening abroad, outside of the United States, and then the focus on the Somali youth that have traveled back to Somalia and Syria and other places and to risk their lives or to die in fighting something that maybe we don't understand. So we want to support the positive things that are going on in that community, and we need to know how to do that. If you would like to get in on this conversation, please do call the show, 347-857-3121. I also have the chat room open if you would like to just throw out a question in the chat room. I have some questions that when I get back, Abdulmalik will answer some of the questions. But if you would like to just chat me up, please click on chat and you will be connected and redirected to the chat room as well. This conversation is really good. We need to be educated. All of us need to be educated, even within our own community, and that is the premise and the kind of the highlight of tonight's conversation thus far. I'll be right back in just one moment. Thank you, and I am back with Cultural Conversations, your host and producer, Verona Mitchell. We're going to resume our cultural conversation with Mr. Abdulmalik Asghar. He is a successful media personality in the Muslim community, particularly the Somali community here in the United States, here in Minnesota. And so he's been updating us about what's the state of Muslim political social affairs. Yes, we hear them in the news media. We hear about things that are happening in the Muslim community in Minneapolis. We need someone to tell us what's really going on there. And not only what's really going on from a news media perspective, but what are some of the tools and ways that we can assist? How can we support the positive things that are going on? And so Abdelmalik has come on the show, and he has laid out actually a strategic plan, whether he knows it or not. He's put some wheels into place of what things should happen in communities, and we can all take a lesson from that. It's not only the Somali community, it's other communities as well that could learn from how do we turn our youth around, how can we turn people around who are going a wayward way because they are hopeless or feel hopeless. And so, Abdelmalik, we have, you talked about role models, having to establish role models for individuals. President Obama just appointed, I think he appointed two Muslims, if I'm not mistaken, but maybe one, to hold visible high ranks in office. And he's been scrutinized for this move, and he's been applauded. What do you think about that move, that political appointment?
That's a good question, but I didn't follow for that one, that appointment. I hear in the news, but I didn't catch about that appointment. I only know last month he appointed for a new ambassador to Somalia.
Yes.
In America, is that one or the different one?
Yes, no, that is the one. That is the one that I'm referring to. You know, do you think that more should happen? Like, you know, I know Keith Ellison, you know Keith Ellison from the political ranks here in Minnesota. But, you know, if we're looking for role models within our community, or role models who share our religious background, role models who share our lifestyle, role models who share our historical perspective, do you think that we need to see more political, you know, more political people who are successful? I'm just trying to figure out what is the key there?
Oh, absolutely. You're pointing a good point. Is the community, if the role point, role model, basically the definition in our community is, if I can do it, you can do it. That's number one. But the role model we success about the politics we're starting right now, we success about businesses, we success about graduating university in Minnesota, graduating doctorates, we success. But what we're missing is the role model about second chance, a person who failed the life and then stand it up and then become something. That is what we're missing. For those who failed the school, said, I failed the school, but I go back, and now I am. I'm getting my doctorate. I'm getting my master's. I failed the school how many times, and now I am. I fail in a business. Now I am. I failed the personality. So those kind of things we need. I was in a drover. I was in a drunk. I was in a drug deal. I was in gangs, but now I am. We're missing the Somali community for that role model, a person who stand it up and come to the publicly, and I said, this is my background. This is how I fail. But in good side, we show them. We work hard them. I was a cab driver myself. I was a dishwasher. And now I'm assistant principal. Now I'm working the state. I'm a candidate. We show that role model, and they see that, how hard we work. But what we're missing is how we can show them a second chance. Do they have a room to the communities for those who fail? Do they have a room? How they go back to the society, to the communities, and become something? And then not take advantage for the bad Muslims.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I think maybe your mosque, I don't know, who has the key, or community centers or community, you know, developments, just a cry, outright charge to people, share your story. Share your path. How did you get to where you are? And then have it in the public. Have a celebration of accomplishment, and have people tell their story. Like you wasn't born
absolutely.
With a silver spoon. You wasn't born with a silver spoon in your mouth. You had to work to get here, and tell your story. Go to schools and tell your story. I think that's a great idea. With regard to, with regard to some of the radical images that we see and we're witnessing through the media and news outlets, what is the message there? I read the article about the three Muslims that were killed on the East Coast, you know, and that touched my heart, really, for anybody. But there's a lot of fear in that, and I think a lot of the fear comes from the images that we see.
Yeah.
How do we separate, just like you said, separate the good Muslims from the negative, the not-so-good Muslims? What are we seeing through the media? How could we as just general public kind of get a difference going on there?
Oh, that's absolutely a good question. And the media themselves, it depends on CNN or Fox News, all of them, those who hosted them, they need to understand it about their audience. They might look in one-way audience. They're talking about America, about Islam. And that's not it is. It is about they need to get educated about the Islam and the Muslim, the difference between that. Islam is the religion itself, isn't it? Like a Christian. If I say all day long in a CNN or Fox News about the Christian, it doesn't make sense. What makes sense is when we narrow the problem and say that the Muslim is the people who use the religion, the people who believe the religion, call Muslim. Then they have a good Muslims and a bad Muslims. That is then when we narrow them, that we know the bad Muslims, if they did in a bad action, they have the consequences. And how we prevented them before they do a bad action. Then we're going to work all the communities. But if they separating the people and they put in Islam and the Christian, that's what happened. Three people killed, as you know, that inside in America. So we're not only they're not only fear about it. So that's a community will become fear. So we don't. That's what I'm running away to create a fear to change an opportunity. How are we gonna be protect about this and create an environment is safe for everyone and to stop them the bad guys.
Yeah, because I see so much filtered on, you know, not filtered, actually supporting this kind of negative images, just bombarded with negative images. And on the news media, we don't get a sense of difference. What is the difference? Where are these people located? You know, they're located somewhere in, you know, Syria or somewhere far away. And everyone that you see here in America, your next door neighbor that are Muslim, they have nothing to do with the images you just saw on television. I think people have such a hard time deciphering that. We're going to work, we're having our social hour, we have our workout. There's so much time that has, you know, that's so many activities that's pulling for our time, and then we sit in front of the media, sit in front of the news, and the first images that we're seeing is these people are attacking us. These people are against us. This is what they're doing. And then you see your next-door neighbor, and then you're angry at your next-door neighbor because they are Muslim. I think that has caused people to be murdered. That has caused communities to be ostracized, and that has caused a lot of fear and anger in certain communities and with certain people who believe that. How can we stop that kind of groupthink?
I think we can stop it only to what only we can do is educating, because the Somali community right now we have a tough time. We fear our children to go back. We fear our children to get attacked or to bullying in schools, and then you're Muslim, you're Islam, you're this, they're bullying. So we're feeling if we travel in an airport, it's to stop us and labeling us and asking a question, where are you traveling, who are you traveling, going your privacy things, and then make you funny things. So we have in a tough time, but our Somali community, we need to come a patient. Minnesotan is a very good people. They welcome us in 1992 when we come here, our first group. They have a good patience. We learned from zero English. Now our children are graduating schools. So Minnesota is we have a time to Somali community. We need to stand it up and educate as far as we can go. I know Fox News or CNN, they're not listening to us. But as far as our neighbors, that we can show them that we are good people, we are good community, we are good society. We're struggling. We love our children to stay with us. We raise them here for hard work, 3 jobs, 4 jobs, and then lost to, so your son go back to Somalia, your daughter go back to Somalia and suicide. We feel pain for that. But at the same time, also, we feel pain when our children go to University of Minnesota and then somebody said they're Islam and killed them. Also, we feel pain. So both of the time, we got hurt. So we need our Somali community this time to be awareness, to be educate them within our communities, and at the same time, also, our neighbors to educate them the differences between Islam and Muslim, the good Muslim, the bad Muslim, how we can collaborate for if we see sensitive things or if it's suspicious, it's who do we want to call? Even we Somali community, they don't have any numbers to call. You know, we need to put in the numbers, you know, to call them. And say, if you see suspicion, call these numbers. And to go to schools, to go to communities, to say if you see suspicious, please call that number. We are here with you. So I don't see a collaboration. But what I see is, in organization-wise, some people who want to make advantage and take a business. And those who want to make a business, they want to make a fear the communities. Oh, thousands of Somalis in Minnesota, that will be dangerous. We need millions of dollars to protect them. What are they going to do? They're going to put us in a camera in our apartments, in our bed. What are they going to do? The question is, our community, we need to suffer this problem. And we need to come up a patient, and Minnesota are good people, and we need to collaborate. And I see that we don't see right now collaboration.
Mm-hmm. I see where you're coming from with that. You don't want this to be an opportunity for people to make money off the suffering of people in the community. I respect that. I respect that wholeheartedly. Talking about a sense of respect, I've been just tuned into social media and, of course, the kind of traditional media. I've never known a time where I've seen so much disrespect as it pertains to religious satire. And maybe my antenna is up. Maybe they have religious satire for Christians. I'm pretty sure they do. I haven't paid much attention, but I have paid attention to what was going on in France with the religious satire as it pertained to Muslims. And could you speak a little bit about that? What, you know, I don't think anybody should be making fun of anybody's religion. That's just me. But what does that mean for a Muslim when you make a satire or a negative satire against Muhammad?
You know, as you know that I'm not an Islamic scholar, but as I practice and pray in the Christian, the prophet we call Isa, Jesus, in our religion saying that you have to respect all other religions. All other prophets. If somebody said Muhammad is bad, you cannot say that also your Christian is bad. Our religion said no, because Jesus is our, we call Isa, is our prophet as well. So so that's why you don't see that a lot of Muslims are not saying something bad to the other religions. But however, some gang people that I told you, the bad Muslims, if they use the name of Muslim and kill people, we always suffer that problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is what we pay the price, and that is what we get labeled for that. When somebody Muslim did something wrong, they label all the religion things. So, and
yeah,
still they're not filtering about, is it that person or is it the whole Muslim?
But it comes from, you know, people who make a mockery out of other people's religion as well. So, you know, I nothing justifies murder. Nothing to me justifies, you know, the kind of negativity that we've been seeing on the news. But again, in that still in that tone, you know, we have to guard ourselves. I wouldn't want anybody to ridicule Christianity or God or Jesus. I just wouldn't. You know, it just wouldn't make me feel positive about something like that. It just, you know, it's like, oh, my God, a lightning bolt is about to come and strike somebody. They're doing this. And I think we need to be respectful of other people's things. That's just me. But I can, you know, if people get angry, nothing justifies death to me. You know, if someone is an idiot, they're just an idiot. One other question, and as we kind of wind down our time here, I'm glad that I can have a friend that I can ask these questions to, Abdul Malik. And you've taught culture before, you know, and so me coming off with a stupid question, there's no stupid question, of course. But how can we coexist together? You know, if I'm looking at what happened on the East Coast with the three young people who were murdered. There's definite, and, you know, people are saying that wasn't a hate crime. That was definitely a hate crime. They were definitely targeted. In every general sense of the word, they were definitely targeted. How can we coexist? How can we coexist together?
I think the bad people are everywhere. But for us in society, for those who, like me or you, claiming they're good people, we need to stop those as much as we can. How are we going to stop them? It's two things. One is to educate them. Or if we see a crime is happening, we need to report them, and we need to know how to report and where to report. Those think we can do that. But we need to educate about the people in the good things and to use the media. And if we're about the good things, we're raising children. We don't want to get hurt in other children's. So how are we going to raise the children in a good way, in good neighborhoods? In 22 years, I live in Minnesota. I was working hard, raising children. I want to live comfortable. I travel Somalia. I know Somalia there. And I educate my children about you live in the best country here. But I know some parents, they don't have opportunity to send their children back home and bring it back and show them the reality what's going on over there. But a lot of parents, they don't have the opportunity. But I'm saying that we need to educate our children. We need to educate our neighbors, not ourselves sometimes, but our neighbors in schools and establish. That's why I used to teach a culture competence about, you know, the difference. We are differences, but at the same time, how we take opportunity for that differences. I have some good things. You have some good things. How we do that commonality, those good things. But not to change in a politics or not to change in business. When we change in a politics or when we change in business, that has become a biases. That's become ego things. I need more money to make these people, to take advantage of those people. Or politics to put these people more power than to other people. But if we do a regular Minnesotan people, as we love it in Minnesota, and that's why we choose to live in Minnesota, it's a good place. And we die for it. We will stop anything we saw it, any bad things we saw it. We're going to stop them. So we need to defend it in Minnesota. We need to defend it for any bad things that we saw. We need to stop them. But we need to increase where we're going to report for those if we see a problems. And at the same time, how we create an environment, not to fear. I don't want to fear FBI. I don't want to fear for police and FBI. They're getting $15 million to put my camera for 20 cameras in my home. That's not fair when you don't have the cameras in Eagan or Eden Prairie. You put me more cameras, and we're all in Minnesota. So how are we going to create a good environment not to make it a business and not to use a politics?
Right. I think you hit on some very important strategic points that someone needs to bring to the forefront, and it needs to be on a larger media scale and a more positive media scale. If this is the plan that we have for our community to help remedy some of the things that we're seeing, Now, I know there's a big Somali festival that happens in the summer. I think it happens in the summer. You know, that's a great festival. I would like to see more of it in the news media, that these are the positive things that are happening, and get everyone involved, you know, all the youth involved, everyone involved for this positive thing to happen, and more positive images on the news demanded from your community, Abdomali, that, you know, more positive things could happen. And there are people who are in school who are doing the right things and who are doing great things and doing good things. And I think we need to hear about their story. How did they get there more?
Just like you,
you are the role model. You are the role model that you spoke about. You are the role model. I want to thank you for joining me tonight. Tell our listening audience a little bit about what you're doing. I know, do you still have your, you know, the media TV show? I know you were
Yes, I do.
You were doing a lot of things. We do a lot of things. How could someone kind of catch up with you? What are you doing lately?
Oh, thank you so much. We do every Friday. We have a live show in MTN, Minneapolis Television Network. It's a 5 to 6. It's a 1 hour. Every Friday is live. People call in. We invite different guests. We interview them. And that's a volunteer. We never get money. We never apply grants. That's a community back to give them. I started in 1998. Up to now, I'm doing every Friday in 1 hour. That is one thing. Then I work now at the Minnesota House Republican Caucus, working there. I'm doing the session now. We're doing session until May. And then after June, I will go back to my school. I was assistant principal at North Minneapolis. And other than that, I'm raising the children. So the children are growing. My son is going to Normandale Community College that I graduated.
Oh, my goodness. And,
right, and my other two children, they go in Southwest, and Henry. And my youngest is third grade. She's going to Best Academy in North Minneapolis.
Oh, great. That is wonderful. They were babies when I last saw them. So you kissed them and wished them well for me. I want to thank you for joining me tonight, Abdomali. Thank you for blessing our audience with your knowledge and your wisdom.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining me on My Cultural Conversations tonight. Please join me again next week. Thank you very much. This is Verona Mitchell, and thank you for joining me on Cultural Conversations. At Cultural Conversations, we're bringing weekly cultural issues and topics to our online studio. Join me next week as we bring more of Cultural Conversations. Thank you for joining me. See you next week.